And we're back here once again with another episode of the Iron Man Podcast, episode 386, with Mr. True Believer. It's going to be his first time on the show. I think I saw one of his random comic book videos, or his Eric July video randomly just popped up in my feed. And I was like, who's this guy? Seems kind of cool. So I went through his channel. I was like, oh, okay. He had already followed me on Twitter. And I was like, oh, okay. I'm going to just hit this guy up and see if he wants to come on the show. And he was like, yeah. And I was like, oh, okay. So we just set up the day and now we're here. But what's going on, man? How are you doing?
Yep. Here we are, brother. 389?
Yeah. Well, 386. Wow. So 386. Close to 400. Yeah.
Impressive, sir. That's some good consistency there.
Yeah. To be fair, it's not my first podcast rodeo. This was kind of like, you know, when I learned everything, I basically put everything I wanted into the show that I finally wanted to make it look like the way I wanted to. Because right. I first started podcasting in like 2020, but I always wanted to do it, but I never had like the equipment to do it. Then I also never had the programs to do it too. Like I didn't want to do it through like Discord. I didn't want to do it through OBS because I felt like it looked kind of jank. So StreamYard came out, I think, what, 2020? Actually, and I saw like my friend KDOT use it, and I was like, oh, that was kind of cool. Maybe I can start doing the podcast live, because anytime I ever did like a podcast with someone that was pre-recorded, never really got any traction. And this is when I was still like super obsessed with views. And anytime I did like a podcast live, I always got more views. So I started podcast. It was called like The Real Takedown was the first one. Real cringe, stupid name. I still have three of the original episodes. They were a doozy. They were a rout. So then after that, I had, what was the next one after that? After that, I had the Nightwing podcast. And that was my second attempt at, because before, after the episodes were live from the first one, I would just kind of take them down and re-upload them. But there was no views in that. So the Nightwing podcast, I was like, these episodes are just staying up. Actually, these are going to stay up. And then I kind of started making other more podcasts. I made another one for the one-on-ones. That was like the Batman podcast. I had one for Yu-Gi-Oh. We had one called the Illuminati podcast. That one actually was pretty big for a lot of people. But then I lost my first YouTube channel. They took it down, actually. But really? No one believes this when I bring them on. I had about almost 300 subscribers, actually, my very first channel, actually. I started doing this on October 15th of 2015, and I'd already made a second channel dedicated to, like, just League of Legends stuff, so I just ended up rebranding the second channel to what it looks like right now, and then I have an announcement for what I'm going to do for another channel coming up, so this one supposed to be the podcast where I have all my one-on-ones. If I wanted to have a Yu-Gi-Oh podcast here, if I wanted to do like the panel shows, but League of Legends is still separate. You know, I think that needs to be gaming stuff. Mostly always you want to have it separate from your regular stuff like this. So
yeah.
And I'll ask you, man, how was your life growing up? Actually,
growing up, wow, you're going way back in history there. Well, the 80s were pretty cool. No, it was good. You know, I grew up sort of down south here, running barefoot through the woods and all that, and reading the comic books that I could get my hands on, you know, at the drugstore or the corner store. Yeah, used to pick up bottles to trade those in for a little bit of pocket cash to pay for comic books.
Okay, so what was the first comics you remember getting, actually?
The first comics I remember? Probably some, I think a neighbor dumped a box of comics on my mom, and it was a bunch of Batman issues with
those must have been like Detective Comics issues from like the 80s.
Probably from the 70s. I was pretty young, so that would have been early 80s that I got my hands on them. My mom commented that she'd never seen me so quiet, because I sat there with that box of comics and just read them for hours. And so I was kind of hooked after that. And any sort of comic book format, you know, I'll tend to give it a shot, you know.
Okay. And you grew up and you later on, you know, graduated school and all that stuff. How do you look back on life now after that time period?
Well, probably like a lot of old guys, I look back on it and reflect on how young and stupid I was. But without all those stupid mistakes, you don't become the person you are. So you can't really realistically say, boy, I'd love to go back and change X, Y, and Z, because
yeah,
then your life would be totally different, right? You wouldn't have met the people you know, wouldn't have met you.
It's true. Pops, what's up, man? How you doing, man? He says, I gave my pop bottle money to Curtis Lowe. Only Southern boy will get that. Good Lord. Yeah, I remember back when I was younger, we used to sell cans to, you know, have a little bit of extra, you know, pocket change. Actually, I still do that. Actually, but I usually let it pile up way, way too much, actually, you know. So I have to get a lot more better at being efficient at making sure I'm going to recycle them. I know people always found it as like a drag, but I just found that's extra $40. I just like money regardless anyway. But people was like, but you never get back the money you really pay for. Guys, most things you do in life, you're never going to get your money back. It's just how that was going to work, you know?
Well, that's true. That's true. Yeah, in those days, when you return a soda pop bottle, there were glass bottles, and you got a dime to return one bottle. And so on comic book day, I would go around and pick up about 10 or 12 bottles and turn those in and get maybe a dollar.
Yeah, because back then comics were like, what, 10, 15 cents or something like that?
Well, I don't go back quite that far. In my day, they started out about 25 cents. Then, you know, in my later teen years, they were about 65, 75 cents. But
yeah,
you could realistically in those days pick up a few bottles and cash them in and get some comics. Mm-hmm. You know.
All right. So let's start here with YouTube. How did you eventually, you know, start YouTube? Was it a person that you had saw doing a show? Was it like one of those, was like John Campia? A lot of people, it's like Chris Stuckman, there's Jeremy Johns. What were you originally watching on YouTube the most? Was it just like movie content?
Probably the most content that I was watching was music.
Okay.
You know, like some gaming stuff, you know, like some gaming guides or just people making their own original content out of stuff.
So like Game Grumps?
I'm not familiar with that channel. Jontron? I don't know.
Yeah, like, man, I remember back then coming on YouTube and looking at like Angry Joe and Game Grumps and all stuff, and I didn't really understand all that drama they were bringing up, because I just wasn't really on the side of Twitter then. I would just mostly kind of watch all that stuff from their point of view. And growing up, when you bought a video game and you played it, I just had really no idea all this drama was going on with like all these other people, actually.
Well, that's a weird thing, man. And that seems like that's everywhere. If you're people, you know, engage in that kind of behavior and get kind of tribal and draw sides, like for what kind of bands they like, or you know, which comic books they like. It's Marvel, DC, and it even gets so particular, even on the independent scene. You know, which independent creator are you standing behind? And they just kind of draw sides and go to war, man. I've never seen anything quite like it. Generally, what I do is I sort of approach my whole thing from the point of view of the reader, you know, of the comic book consumer. And I'm not really overly concerned with the individuals behind the work as much as I am the work. Provided, of course, they're not some genocidal maniac, right?
Because that happens for for manga that people don't know. Like this, it's weird because for manga, you know, like the big creators, they're known, but people don't know them for like their politics. Like a week before that, Akira Toriyama just passed away, the creator of Dragon Ball and all those other franchises, and you know, everyone was praising him. And I told people in the video that I'm going to put out, the memory of Akira Toriyama, what the biggest thing that I always loved about him was that we never heard about his politics. None of us know what he really voted for, and most of us would never care. All we cared about was like who was going Super Saiyan, who was going to be beating each other up. That's all we cared about. And that should be a lesson to any creator out there. If you want to be remembered like him, you need to, then all that politics nonsense you're probably trying to push on people should just be out the door, you know? Like, because a lot of these other weird gaming companies that say he made a bunch of racist characters, they're just jealous because they'll never be remembered for anything as good as he could ever put out, you know? Because he was someone that everyone just unanimously loved him for what we just brought up. All you cared about was the property that he made. That's it.
That's right. I agree 100%. You know, there's no reason why you should even be aware of their political views, you know,
or
their religious views, or you shouldn't know much of anything about their personal life, you know?
Yeah. Neither should you be aware versus should they be telling you. That's just how it should be.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. You know, especially if you're a public figure like that, you would think that the one thing they would crave above all else would be a little bit of privacy.
But yeah.
A lot of them can't leave it alone, you know? Hollywood celebrities, musicians, you know, the list goes on.
Mm-hmm. So, what was the final nail in the coffin for you actually making a YouTube channel? You just had like this one video you wanted to do and you just were like, fuck it, I'm doing it.
Well, I started delving into the independent comics. Sort of scene. And when I saw the amount of material out there and the amount of high quality material in particular, it really caught my attention. And I'm kind of a sucker for an independent artist of any type, you know, a musician or a writer or a filmmaker. You know, I really enjoy seeing people getting out and doing their own thing, especially in today's age where you can interface pretty much directly with the audience that you're looking for. You don't have, there's no longer a barrier for some company to come along and say, hey, you're good enough. And we're going to take you under our umbrella and then present you to the world. Well, now you can present yourself to the world. You know?
Mm-hmm. That's the thing that I saw initially when it came to indie comic books, because initially how I would see indie comic books, because Eric had, I saw him that came out in the year 2022 with the campaign that he had. And a bunch of these people that I just didn't know were like under his thread and talking about other indie comic books actually. And I was like, the fuck's an indie comic book? Because usually when I think of like indie comic books, I would think of like Image or Dark Horse. So I thought, so naive that I was, I thought people who were indie all just worked for Image. I thought indie, you just worked for Dark Horse. Because like that's what I would think, right? The major publishers that are indie, and I don't even consider Dark Horse or Image indie. They have some pretty big titles to their names, right? I thought
they wouldn't be like, now, but when they first got started, absolutely they were considered indie. You know, they had the Image in particular had the big advantage of having some sort of quasi celebrity creators,
right?
You know, forming up Image. But even before then, there were independent comic book companies like back in the 80s, like Comico and First Comics, and I really fell in love with titles like Grimjack from First Comics. You know, if you haven't heard of that, you know, look that up. I think you can still get reprints and omnibuses on Amazon. So that's Timothy Truman and John Ostringer. And Ostringer is the one, I think, the creator of Suicide Squad. And I don't know where you would have seen Truman's artwork from, unless you're just into comics in general and maybe would have seen some of his role-playing game illustrations.
And I remember just going through all of these people's comments. I'm that demented person where if there's like a huge giant thread, I just kind of go through all the comments because I'm just demented like that. Because I do kind of want to see what a lot of people are saying. Because my friend, he's always like, well, the most upvoted comment's the only one that matters. And it's like, no, like, because that's, I would kind of like to see what other people are saying, because the most upvoted comment could, you know, be one or two things. You know, it could be just, maybe that's just what people just normally agree with, or it's something that people just, you know, maybe not want to agree with. I don't know, but I would like to see what a lot of people are saying. And then Comicsgate came along, so I started seeing people say, like, hail Comicsgate, and I was like, what the fuck is Comicsgate? And I started learning history about it, and I was like, okay, this sounds like a kind of reversed, weird version of what Image Comics is, actually. That maybe people won't admit that, but that's kind of what it is. You just want to boil it down to, like, the absolute simplicity of it. And then there were these other guys that would pop up. They have like campaigns, and then I learned what an Indiegogo campaign was. I learned what a Kickstarter campaign was, and I bring people on for the shows. They told me the process of making it comic book, because before I thought you just kind of just got an artist and you wrote a story, you kind of went and printed it, and that's just not that how that goes actually. So there's a lot that I learned. Yeah, so there have been a lot that I've learned in these past past 2 to 3 years about the process of making it independent comic book and paying your artist and all that stuff. And it takes a lot, actually. And I do, you know, highly respect the effort of, you know, the medium of making a comic. Actually, I love comic books. I buy everything from a comic book known to man. I buy flop. I still buy floppy still. Like, I just like Walmart 4-pack that I bought, like, I think 2 years ago before I moved to my newest place right now. I just opened it and it had this in there. Yeah, there was a few other things in there too, but this is one that really piqued my interest, actually. It was weird because, you know how people said, like, the reason why comics haven't been selling is because they haven't been in big box retailers. They were. It's just, for some reason, the deals just fell through and they just maybe weren't making enough money. Because I remember DC specifically had DC 3-packs, 4-packs. They had the 100-page giants, which were like Shonen Jumps. I'm pretty sure you know what Shonen Jump magazines were. They were like anthology collection of manga stories with like Naruto, Bleach, One Piece, okay. Maybe Gintama, Dragon Ball. And that's what got me into reading more manga, exposed me to a lot more series, actually. And DC was doing that with their 100-page giants, but then they stopped doing it. Because, you know, DC can't stick with anything for a long period of time. It's just, you know, if it's not making the hardcore dollars, they just got to get the fuck out. That's just how it is for them. You know?
Seems like the big two are both guilty of that these days. They're doing a lot of limited runs of things that look like they could be really interesting, but then they're going to do a 5-book series and then call it. So it's kind of weird, and it's difficult to get into an ongoing series if you don't know how long it's going to last, or I don't know what to say about, you know, the flagship titles like, say, Amazing Spider-Man. I mean, I started reading Amazing Spider-Man again because I started it over at number one because I thought, well,
maybe it's about the reboot. Zeb Wells stuff, yeah.
Yeah, and it was not a reboot. They're starting at number one for some reason. I'm like, okay, well, it's the same series.
They didn't even have a reboot like DC did. They just chose to start everything at number ones again because Marvel is just obsessed with number ones.
Yeah, make all of them number one. This is the first one for this month.
Yeah. Because recently, Amazing Spider-Man, so they had this like big giant event called Gang War, even though that was a thing already in their continuity for Spider-Man, but, you know, fuck it, right? So Gang War is over, and Sabretooth and Wolverine are having a war. DC had Gotham War. What is their obsession with war recently? There was Gang War, there's Sabretooth War, there's Blood Hunt, which is a war between the demons, vampires, and the Marvel heroes.
Like, they love to have events where the storyline is spread out over several of their titles so that they can try to beef up the sales for each title because it forces you, if you want to follow every chapter of the event, you have to go and buy every book that's involved in that event. And that's something that was like done years past as sort of like just a marketing tool every once in a while, but now it's like that's the normal thing to do for some reason. And it's, as a comic book reader, it can be exhausting.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's one of those things where, gosh, you just have to kind of just pick the title you're reading and just kind of just go with those. Because I told myself when I was buying floppies, I'm not buying all those random subsequent issues that I don't care about. Like, I'm not buying Red Hood number one if I'm only interested in, like, Batman and Nightwing, you know? And you shouldn't have to buy Red Hood number one to figure out what's going to happen with all that stuff. You should just be following one storyline with this character. Like, they have all this content that come out because people think it's like it's all, it's woke. I'll be honest, it's not really woke. Most of it is just not interesting and not good. And by not good, it's like average to mid at best. And given how many titles they try to bring out weekly, it's just not worth it. Like, just recently, or just Batman, for example, right? Because we would know this. Batman is their flagship character for DC. So you have Batman. There's like, I think I counted. So someone tallied it up. There's 14 Batman solo titles. They just started a brand new one this week called Batman Dark Age, another futuristic DC Black Label story. They just started it this week. Yeah. So that'll be like the 14th one. Then when it comes to Batman, there's like Batman adjacent stuff. So what would I mean by adjacent? It'd be like, things like Penguin, Catwoman solo titles, Poison Ivy. Those are Batman adjacent characters, right? So that would mean Nightwing. That would mean like Red Hood potentially if he ever gets his own ongoing. Batwoman. There's a lot. Like if you look at Batman and just all his adjacent characters getting their own stuff and also his own like individual Batman stories. Because Batman, there's Batman and Robin. There's the Batman, the Brave and the Bold. You're like, there's World's Finest with Batman and Superman. That's Batman. That's his story with Superman. That's his stuff. Spider-Man's just about the same. There's Spider-Man, the Amazing Spider-Man. There's fucking Spectacular Spider-Man. There's the Miles Morales stuff. There's the Spider-Gwen stuff. There's Venom, Carnage, Spider-Verse stuff. Just ridiculous.
Yeah, they have to milk those cash cows, right?
Yeah. Fucking hell, man.
It's like I started reading that Amazing Spider-Man run again. Like I said, I saw that they had a number one come out, and I was like, thought I was getting into something new, and I wasn't. And I'm disappointed to see that Tombstone is like the main villain who's on par with Spider-Man. I'm seeing Spider-Man getting caught in situations that Spider-Man just would never have been caught in before in the days that I used to read him in. And there was one scene where they had him chained up with these manacles and he couldn't break them. And I'm thinking to myself, well, what in the world are these chains made of? Because Spider-Man could break out of most anything. You know, he's he's incredibly strong. So it was just weird because I think it was the 80s when the first time I ever saw Tombstone and Spider-Man just backhanded him like a punk.
Yeah, Tombstone, he's the Spider. He's like one of those underrated Spider-Man villains for a lot of people that don't know who he is. From what I remember looking through his history, he's a character where he has this like beef with this like reporter because this reporter was trying to report on some underhanded things he was doing, and then eventually that guy ended up getting like shot in the back or something like that. He was almost paralyzed, and then he has this like ongoing feud with this one guy, and the Spider-Man gets involved. Tombstone, he was also he's the guy with the sharp teeth,
right?
Yeah. He's the backstory on him and Hammerhead is pretty brutal.
Yeah, but they're just not the kind of characters that could go toe to toe with Spider-Man.
Yeah, never. Themselves. Yeah, they're like the "Hey, you don't get to touch my boss" kind of characters, and they would get.
Yeah, they're enforcers. You know, they're like kingpin level things and the characters, and a few of them together teaming up could give Spidey some trouble. But one of them, not at all.
Yeah. Because my thing specifically is, you have Ultimate Spider-Man number one that came out. And it meant for that a lot of people, they really gravitated towards that. And the reason why a lot of people gravitated towards that is because they finally gave him a happy ending with Mary Jane with kids. And it reminded me of Superman and Lois, the TV show, where basically it's just Superman. He's already established in his universe. There's no like origin story. There's no like I'm going through the motions and Lois Lane stuff. I'm already established in my universe. People know I'm Superman. Superman knows how to control his powers. And he just has kids. And a lot of people like that because it's a thing of like, well, at a certain point in some of these stories, can we see these guys like actually grown up? Like how many times do I got to see this guy is fucking starting from the bottom and working toward their way up, you know? And I can understand why a lot of people gravitated towards Ultimate Spider-Man, you know? The issue with Ultimate Spider-Man, the only real issue I had with it was that in the first issue, he's not really Spider-Man. He's at the end of the book, he becomes Spider-Man at the final page. But other than that, no, it's a fine story. And I told people there was a video that I did about Ultimate Spider-Man. I told people why it sold so well. People were just fucking sick and tired of seeing Peter gain all this stuff only to have it taken away. Like in a, I don't know if you've seen Spider-Man No Way Home, but in Spider-Man No Way Home, after all these movies, they built him up and gave him all these things. And with this movie, they kept taking things away from him. They took away his Aunt May. They took away Happy Hogan from him. He lost Tony. He ended up losing his best friend, his girlfriend. And everyone's memory was wiped of him. And I'm like, even in the movies, you can't just, like, freaking escape this guy. Like, you can't just have a happy ending. What is with them and just making sure he suffers? I have no clue why it's a fetish with them, you know?
It could be the, you know, sort of the evolution and the amplification of Stan Lee's original vision of him being a superhero with actual real problems.
Right.
And so I guess just over the decades, it's sort of snowballed into, borderline ridiculous hardship, you know, that, you know, most people would not encounter that much hardship. You know, in the beginning, Peter Parker had the appropriate amount of real life things to worry about. Your rent, or getting to class on time, or missing a date with Mary Jane. You know,
it's always like the underdog. Yeah, he's the guy that can't get it right. Yeah,
now it's like it's just overkill in a lot of ways. You know.
Yeah, and my biggest thing when it comes to like all of this stuff is like, what is the point of all of these Spider-Man titles? I just don't get it. You know. You have Amazing Spider-Man going on. You have Ultimate Spider-Man. You have Spectacular Spider-Man, which is basically just a version of Dynamic Duo for him and Miles Morales. And let's be honest here, Miles Morales doesn't sell very well. I mean, Miles Morales is never in any contention for, you know, top comic books sold. And comic books sold for, like, who don't know, it's like stores buying it from their distributors. That's not actual people buying the stuff. It's just how much units they bought from their distributors. Miles Morales is all, like, barely worth anything. Actually, it's funny. A lot of people say they like Miles Morales, but his comics don't sell, like, at all.
Well, I don't think fans are ever going to accept Miles Morales as Spider-Man, because that's Peter Parker. Miles Morales is cool. He's got a cool set of powers. He can do different things. You know, he deserves, I think, his own character and his own name. There's a lot of potential with that character, you know. But why it's either that or bite the bullet and grow a pair and really kill Peter Parker off for good. And then Miles Morales is all you got. But they know very well. Maybe they don't know very well, but they're just not willing to risk doing that. So, yeah, having two Spider-Men, it's just weird. You don't have two Supermen at the same time. Not really. You don't have two Batmen at the same time. So, why would you want to do that with Spider-Man? Give Miles Morales his own name. I came up with one suggestion on a thread somewhere. So call him Redback. It's like the third most deadly spider in the world, you know? It's a Redback Black Widow variant.
Mm-hmm.
Suits already. You got the right coloring, you know?
And then now, like, recently, Mary Jane's a superhero now called Jackpot.
Yeah, that's a little rough there.
Mary Jane
doesn't need to be a superpower person.
I don't get why. Like,
but that cheapens her character, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you empower everyone, then no one's, you know, special. I don't subscribe to this weird attitude that anybody can be a hero. Anybody can be heroic. Anybody can go do something heroic, but not everybody can be Captain America. Not everybody can be Spider-Man. Not everybody can be a super special individual like that.
Mm-hmm.
You can't just slap a suit on somebody, you know, like the Falcon becoming Captain America.
Mm-hmm.
You know, giving him the shield doesn't make him Captain America. The reason that character is worthy of taking on that mantle is because of who he is.
Mm-hmm.
But on the other hand, Sam has always been his own man anyway, so I don't know that if you were writing that character and keeping him in character, would he have been okay calling himself Captain America? I don't know. I'm inclined to say not. I think the Falcon probably would have, as his own person, remained the Falcon, you know, whether he was carrying that shield or not.
Mm-hmm. And I know you did a review of a Century comic recently. Dude, I'll be honest here. I saw they were doing a Century number one, and I was like, you know what? It might be number one. I might get into it. And I was like, I just don't give a fuck about Century. Because for me, when it came to comics, I had to learn about the characters, like, just on the internet, like, reading, like the bios and the current stories they were currently under.
Right.
Century, when I first read Century, it's like that guy with that depressed personality. And it's like he did something with, like, the Void or some shit like that, from what I remember. It just never was interesting. I was reading his stuff, and I was like, this character's just not interesting. Like, there's nothing about him where I was like, I would ever own actual book space around this character, you know?
Yeah, well, the Sentry's, he's just a, in my opinion, another Superman clone. And that's fine. That's fine. You know, if Marvel wanted to be able to tell their own Superman stories, then there's nothing wrong with having a counterpart to Superman. And they have more than one. They've got the Sentry, there's Hyperion, and there's Gladiator.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You know, so they've got plenty to work with there. But you're right. So the Sentry himself, I never saw as being that interesting of a character anyway. I ended up buying that limited run just because, honestly, there was a panel of the main character, Mallory, I think her name is, who later took the name Solaris at the end of it, where she's expressing some remorse over accidentally destroying personal property of regular people. And I didn't remember ever seeing anyone write a superhero like that, you know? So I was like, wow, you know, that's kind of interesting that this person's thinking about that. So I picked that up and I read that, and I gave that review, and it was lackluster. You know, they had a really good idea and they could have done something great with it, but they didn't. I don't know why. I don't know why they missed the boat on that.
This is my problem with like all these like modern comic books. It's like the art is not that it's a, the art's never the problem, really. It's more like the writing and the direction. Like, because people, I was having a conversation with one of my friends like about a month ago when I had to go get a new computer. Well, sorry, monitor, because I fell. So my monitor fell when I was going crazy on streaming, and it tapped just my desk a little bit and it cracked. And he was having a conversation. He was like, you know, the comic books from back in the day, because I was reading a little bit of them, are like not that good. And I was like, oh, okay, fair, sure. And he was like, I think he said he liked some of the stuff that came out now. And I was like, why? I told him some of that stuff is pretty bad. And he was like, well, the art's better. And I was like, well, yeah, the art might be a little bit better compared to the technology we have now, but that's mean the stories are good. And he said, I think we came to a conclusion where we were talking, and it was on the lines of, the stories, ideas are interesting. What we're coming up is like interesting, but they just can't stick the landing. It's like, yeah, I think what they're coming up with in ideas are fine. It's just like, they can't stick the landing at all. And what I also told him was that people don't want to see just characters like this. No one wants to read about Punisher, not Punisher. No one wants to read about a cheap imitation Punisher. No, people want the actual Punisher. As you probably know, they just fucking canceled that guy's shit. Four issues in.
What a surprise that it didn't sell.
Yeah, and trade paperback, and a week after his issue sold. Oh, trade paperback announced for Punisher issues 1 through 4. $16.99. Yeah, I wonder why. Yeah, gee. Thank God store owners did not buy that trash. Thank God. Fucking hell. I didn't.
Well, the problem is a lot of store owners probably did buy that and got stuck with it.
That would probably suck too if you actually bought that thinking that was going to be a good ongoing series. No, you deserve to be stuck with that crap.
There was a time when comic book sales were fairly transparent. Mm-hmm. You could look up, you know, how many were sold. And now it's not that easy.
Right.
And now they're counting units sold not to readers, but to retail outlets, you know, and in some cases, you know, public libraries that have funding to purchase things like that. Mm-hmm. And which, you know, they get bought. Sure, they got bought, but they're also sitting on a shelf or
that's why
to a dollar bin, you know.
Yeah, it's the same thing with those New York Times bestseller books. Like, people gotta understand when you buy a book, in the same way we just said, let's say you buy a book from like Barnes and Nobles or any other prominent bookstore out there, you buying that one book does not mean that 10 other people bought the other books for that book on that shelf. You know,
that's right.
They have a ton of that book in storage in the back room. So someone would say, how would you know that? Guys, because that's how you would stock them. If you don't have, you need product to stock on the shelves, right? So just because someone didn't buy all the product doesn't mean that that's all that they got. They would need to have enough product because they would need enough to sell to the potential customers that would come in and buy the book. And the reason why they get all the product is because they have so much money attached to these big giant like corporations or businesses. They get the cheapest rates. They can get all these extra packages. That's why, like you say, a mom and pop store has to pay more for that stuff because they're not people don't know if they're going to sell that stuff. You know,
they probably can't return it. Barnes and Noble will be sending you back unsold books.
Yeah,
and if you don't want that deal, then they won't carry your book.
Fucking hell, man! And
they're big enough; they don't care about Marvel or DC necessarily.
And that's what they want. People, Marvel and DC, I think, wanted to sell to the direct market, which is like bookstores, like libraries and Barnes and Nobles. But I think local comic shops have still a nice value they can provide, you know?
Sure they do. Yeah.
Yeah. That's what Marvel and DC potentially want. They're like, fuck the middleman. Because everyone recently has been cutting out the middlemen. I don't think we need to cut out every middleman. I think a local comic shop technically even isn't in the middleman. It's the distributor that's the middleman, but...
Well, if Marvel and DC were serious about that, they would really cut out the middleman and interface with their customers directly, and then we'd really see what they're made of.
Yeah.
If they had the courage to operate like, say, Alterna Comics or mm-hmm. Ethan Van Sciver with his books or Eric July mm-hmm. with the way he runs Ripaverse.
Yeah.
They depend on interfacing directly with their customer base.
Right.
And books get sold to readers, or bundles mm-hmm. of books are sold to collectors, you know. Mm-hmm. They're putting out variant covers and trading cards and things like that. EVS is putting out toys. Eric July probably will. Mm-hmm. I don't know why he would not, you know, because obviously there's a market for that. But if Marvel and DC were to try to do that, I don't think it would be a rude awakening. I think it, because I think they know exactly what would happen.
Yeah.
But it would definitely peel back a lot of the pretentiousness, you know, if they had to get out there and sell directly to individual customers, you know, instead of unloading who knows how many units on some retailers that can't do anything with them after the fact.
Right. Because that's the problem that people can run into with comic book shops is, I think, so someone had told me, basically, like, to get this special, like, variant cover, then it would have to take on a potential title that has no selling power, like an Iceman number one, or like a new X-Men line that no one's going to care about, just to get this variant cover.
You know, or, most if of the, yeah. Or if there's a hot book that's coming out, so say, you know, if it's a highly anticipated character, and people want that, they're not going to give away a variant cover to a retailer unless he buys, say, 20 copies of the regular cover. So for every 20 copies, he'll get the variant cover. Yeah. Well, of course, he's not going to put that on the shelf. He's going to put that to the side and wait to sell that as a collectible.
Right.
It's kind of a ridiculous model if you're a retailer. It's great for you. If you're the publisher, boy, you love that.
Because that's the thing. Most of those comic books that they can't sell eventually start going in dollar bins.
Yes, they do.
And they may not even sell there. Like, I think I've seen stores that I've been around throughout my life do, like, man, 5 issues, get one free. You surf through some of those issues, it's like there's nothing there worth buying, you know? And I feel bad for them, too, because I think those deals are great. Like 6 books potentially for like maybe 10 bucks. That sounds great. In theory, it sounds great. But it's like, bro, you look at some of that stuff that's there, you're like, I can't buy this shit. This is trash. Yeah, this is terrible.
I saw years and years ago, back in the 90s, there was a comic shop I used to go into to collect all the Ultraverse stuff. And that poor guy got so backed up with back issues that he had a comic books by the pound sale. I don't remember what he was charging by the pound, but you just go pick it up and on the scale, and you got the 1 pound. I think it was
long boxing before it was it was cool.
You got it by the pound. It was like $5 for a pound of comics, and that was a lot of comics, you know.
Not gonna lie, that sounds pretty sweet, honestly.
I've spent a lot of money in that guy's shop back in the day.
Like, because I'm gonna be going to the FNT Vegas meetup. Coming up with the following week. Can't wait to go to a comic shop. Man, I haven't been to a comic shop in fucking forever, honestly, because in my area, we don't have any. We got to drive out to them. We have Frank & Sons, that's also in Redlands. We have Barnes & Noble in Victorville, but we have shops out there too, but that's just, people that say, oh yeah, I don't go to my local comic shop. I'm like, what the fuck? I would kill to have a local comic shop where I live. I would go to it. I don't give a fuck.
Oh, absolutely, man. I mean, you know, especially if you got a couple hours to kill and you can dig through the long boxes, because you find some real gems in those, you know?
I remember, man, I was going through my stuff a few days ago to find some stuff that I wanted to do videos on. Because I told people I want to do like John De La Rose comic book review videos where I'm just reading the book and flipping through the pages. I'm going to redo my Ultimate Spider-Man #1 comic review because I really messed up on that one. But I did one because we reviewed all of Eric's comics and those came out great and I liked those. And then I reviewed Ultimate Spider-Man, but that one, I deleted that one because that video fucking sucked. And then I did Ghost Machine #1, which is the anthology series based on Jeff Johns' new comic book company he's essentially starting. And I thought Ghost Machine was great. I feel like there were some stories in there that have no staying power, which are the very last two in the book. But one of them, I feel like, has a good idea attached to it. I'll just have to see it come out when it does. But Hornsby and... What was the story? Hornsby and Halo? I was like, nah, you can miss me with that dog shit. I ain't buying that trash. Jeff, I like you, but there ain't no staying power in Hornsby and Halo. No one buying that.
Yeah, I hear you. I haven't even looked at that. I mean, these days, I've just kind of had my nose primarily in smaller creators.
Okay.
In individuals that are doing their own campaigns. I've been buying a lot of Alterna stuff.
Okay. Like,
here's a good example.
You that's King Cryptid, thing. Right?
But yes, that's right. Yes, King Cryptid is one of their titles. This is that's one cool. They put out. This is 80 pages on newsprint, right, for $5. And this is a reader copy. I can believe I got that for $3. And it's a reader copy. But this is a T-Bird and Throttle. And
you said you got that for like $4?
$3.
$3. The art on that looks—it's really cartoony. I like it. That's cool.
It's a really cool sort of Bruce Timm inspired style. Mm-hmm. The guy who did it, his name is yeah, Josh Howard, and he's still putting out some of his own stuff. But you know, it's just one example of what's out there. That's 80 pages, and for when it was brand new, it was $4.99 for 80 pages. Okay, and I picked up this one as a reader copy because it's not. I mean, look, it's in great shape. I would not have thought this thing was a discount book just by looking at it, and I got it for $2.99. So I bought all four issues, and they're all 80 pages for the first one, 72 pages a piece for the three. So it's like 150 pages of story for you know, bargain basement prices. And you can get the digital copies of these things for about $3. Mm-hmm. The Giants and most of Alterna's stuff is like 99 cents for a digital copy.
Yeah, I've been on their website before, and most of their stuff is pretty cheap. They have a like huge dollar bargain bin section. That one I'll definitely pick up, because that was really cool. I like that art style. You know, I feel like it can be pretty hit or miss, but when it's really nicely drawn, cartoonish anime kind of style art, then it really makes the pages pop out, and I think it's kind of cool. Yeah,
yeah, this guy nails it. You know, you'll be happy with this if you pick it up. I'm gonna do a review on T-Bird and Throttle here pretty soon. So, yeah, I recommend that. Anything Alternative is doing, it's I haven't seen one from them yet that was a stinker. Yeah.
Because I forgot his name, the guy that owns that company. Oh, my. It's Pete Cimetti, right?
That's correct.
Peter yes. Cimetti. Yeah. You know what's interesting is what I think a lot of people don't do is a lot of people function with this mindset where, like, if they review an indie comic, they won't get a lot of views. But this is what I've always told people for newer content creators. If you're small, or you're starting out in content creation, or you're a channel that's trying to build an audience or something, you're always going to struggle with that. That happens in anything. Just saying, if I wanted to start doing reviews on energy drinks, well, I'm not going to get a lot of views doing it initially starting out, because I am the new person doing it. I see a lot of people say that stuff, dude, and it's like, hold on. Are you saying that people won't want to check out your indie comic book reviews because you're the newest guy? No fucking way. Yeah. That's how it works. You have to build that, and you have to do it through constantly doing it. And there might be some indie comic book reviews you're going to do that you feel like are going to be really good and no one's going to really watch them that much. But that's how it is, though. You're going to, if you want that audience to come to you, you have to build it. PopX Network is a good example of that. They're a comic book, indie comic book based YouTube channel that does based on what people have said, where they can get views for having traction on based on indie comic books. Well, as I told people, guys, they got that by constantly doing it. The only way to get people to you doing that is you constantly do it. You can't just do like two indie comic book reviews and be like, there's no audience here for that. It's like, bro, that is not enough of a sample size for that to ever really be anything.
No, I mean, I think I get an appropriate number of views for my subscriber base. Mm-hmm. I've got a little over 200 subscribers. And I average, you know, between 30 and 60 views for an independent comic book review, and I call that a success so far. I mean,
pretty good.
And I'm not chasing the views anyway. I mean, if I was chasing views, I'd be talking about nothing but, you know, Geeks and Gamers versus Friday Night Tights versus Ethan Van Sciver versus Ripaverse, you know?
Yeah.
Because the few times that I've done, you know, videos on those subjects, like that Ripaverse thing I did, wondering if it was in trouble. That's got the most views of any video I did. That's almost 4,000 views on that thing.
It's fucking crazy.
And, and a lot of comments. And it was very polarized. I had a 59% ratio for likes versus dislikes.
Yeah.
On that, so it's very polarizing material, and it will get you traffic. But I didn't make that video with that in mind. I made that video because, as a paying Ripaverse customer, I had some concerns about the direction of the company and the quality of the books, and so I buy them, so I have a right to say what I want to say about it.
Yeah, and like, you're not bashing Eric. I think a lot of people got to stop doing that. Like, just because people make, who would understand, when you put a title out like that, you put a thumbnail the way you did, that's how you get people to watch your videos. That's how everyone does it. I know people are accusing you of clickbait. It's like, well, you wouldn't have watched the video otherwise. If you had put out a title where it was like, Ripaverse is the best thing ever since sliced bread, no one would have watched that. Because let's be honest here. If you put out a video, it's kind of like, if you have a title of a video and it's kind of more intriguing, just the one you did, or it's like a super dire thing, people watch more. And people always complain about titles like that, but it's the stuff you guys click on, though. You guys don't click on the stuff where it's about good news. It's just not what you do. So people have to kind of, I'll say bait you, but people have to make exaggerative titles like that for you to click on. TMZ does it. I mean, TMZ's pretty big, and well, they do it. No one likes them, but it gets you to watch. That's the point of it. All that matters is, is if you're watching, you know?
Like, yeah, clickbaity stuff works. But even that thumbnail for the Ripperverse thing,
you should have put yourself in a Jesus outfit.
Yeah, like I'm on a cross because some people wanted to crucify me over that. I'm like, guys, listen, you know, these are my opinions, and
on my YouTube channel. Me and Red Strider, who's been in the Ripperverse promotion videos, we did a video where we said, hey, we like this stuff, but this is the stuff that you know, quality of the comics can improve on. We didn't bring up the 3D assets or whatever people bring up with that bullshit. We didn't bring that up at all. I was talking about pure story elements that they could fix on going into book to book. If anyone doesn't believe me, there's a video out of the channel. Just scroll down the video section. We put out a video that said what Eric's comic company could improve on in terms of comic books. That's it, you know? And I'm not bashing Eric. I like Eric's stuff. I watch his videos pretty consistently. I like what he's doing. I like his books. I bought all of them. I bought Yaira already about the magazine. But there's some stuff there in those comics that can improve. If people think they're perfect, that's cool. That's fine. But we all got different opinions, and I think we got to express them, you know?
Well, I mean, you got guys out there saying that everything Eric does is trash, and I don't think it's trash. I mean, I don't.
Well, I've seen some trash people. If you guys want to see some trash, I'll bring up LeagueOfComicBookGeeks.com right now. I'll show you some trash. Oh, if people think his books are the worst, I have a rude awakening for you. Either one, you haven't been reading comics enough, you don't buy them, and you are just being way too hyperbolic. There's no way those are the worst. That's not true. I imagine Poison Ivy books are worse. You know why? No one buys them. No, people don't know what the fuck the stories are.
Well, those are like Poison Ivy and Harley Quinn and things like that. I mean, these are like B-list characters at best. You know, they certainly didn't warrant their own books. The current state of Harley Quinn is just atrocious, in my opinion. I don't get a lot of the mentality behind some of the writing out there. I mean, but anyway, yeah, I'm rooting for Eric. I'm rooting for Ethan Van Sciver. You know, Graham Nolan. You know, all those guys. You know, I want to see all those guys succeed because, and as I said in a video a while back, it's like none of these guys are putting out monthly books anyway. So if there are readers out there that want something to read on a regular basis, they have to shop with all of them. You know, it's not like they're the big two where you can just go have a pull list, you know, every week, you know, and go on payday and pick up $50 worth of comics or something. It doesn't work that way in the indie world.
I'm pretty sure just recently you saw the Spider-Man cover or a variant cover that they're doing with Ultimate Spider-Man number 4. I'm pretty sure you've seen it. It's the one where it's Mary Jane and the kids and Peter. It's a play on the other one that was pretty controversial from The Amazing Spider-Man issue number 600. It's this one right here.
I don't think I have seen that.
Let me see. I'll show you right now.
I believe I've got that. I think I'm subscribed to that series on Amazon.
So this was a cover that people found. I don't know why. I think this cover looks cool as fuck, honestly. But feminists came out. They were like, oh, you're sexualizing Mary Jane. Yeah, the supermodel chick. It gets sexualized. Oh, sure. Crazy. But then this is a new rendition of it. It's going to be a variant cover in Ultimate Spider-Man number 4. And people were kind of polarized on it. I was like, this is how you can tell people have been reading the series. This is what he is. This is what it is. It's Spider-Man having kids. That's it.
Well, there's nothing controversial about that at all. That's like a family photo.
Imagine showing a superhero happy with kids and a wife who loves you. Like, well, what? You know,
he's got a cat, man. So, and it looks like the
cat.
So.
See, that's the problem. The cat's fucking. He's got a lot of pussy right there. Just saying.
A little too much. He's trying to be the Mac Daddy.
And I think when it comes to like comics, that's why I always tell people: if you truly love it. And I love comics. I can show people right now. I have a stack of shit right here. People can't see this stuff because it's on this other. I have so much shit I have to read. I have so much floppies I have to catch up on. I have so much of in general, and I love it. I feel there's a lot of trade paperbacks and unopened floppies right here. You know, there's indie titles I want to get into reading and shit like that.
Here's my Alterna stack that I have to get through.
Oh my god, that's a lot. Are you gonna do like individual reviews on them, one by one, or just all at once?
Well, what I'll do is probably like for Blood Realm, I'm probably gonna like do the first three issues because that's the first story arc and the introduction to the fantasy world. But it'll be kind of a series recommendation probably. Red Koi is a samurai story. I haven't delved very deep into that yet, but it looks really cool. Yeah, this company's just got some really cool stuff. I encourage anyone to go shop at Alterna, you know. And that's just one example of why of all the stuff. Excuse me, all the stuff that's out there. Like I went over to Indie Planet and picked up.
Oh, I love that website. Yeah, I like that website a lot.
Yeah, man, I picked up. There's an artist that I just adore. His name's Stephen Butler, and he's worked for Marvel for a long time. And he had a Spider-Man run, and he's one of my favorite Spider-Man artists. And, you know, this is his work here on a public domain character they brought back called Amazing Man. I mean, look at that work. That's just immaculate. He's everything you'd want in a comic book artist. You know, he's just steeped in the old school technique
and composition. Cool.
Yeah, he's amazing.
Yeah, and for Indie Planet, I bought Voltanarist. That was Jack Lloyd's book. I bought the trade paperback. And I bought the black character from Crockett Comics. I think it was called the Acolyte or something like that.
Concrete Comics?
It's Concrete Comics. Yeah, I bought that first title.
Yeah, I've been eyeballing them for a while, but then I've got a spreadsheet of a backlog reviews to
same here. I have like a notepad where I write down the one that I want and I just kind of leave it there. I'll go on like Near Mint Collection. I watch his videos and he has like this giant library of omnibuses and stuff, and he'll have like these shorts where he pulls out all these Batman books. I'm like, okay, write it down, gotta make sure I have this Batman book in my collection, like a big omnibus and shit. Like there's so many omnibuses and all this stuff that I want. And I told people, hey, if you don't like the modern stuff, that's fine. I got no issues with that. There's plenty of awesome stories that you probably never read from even your favorite characters. There's plenty of stuff from the past. Yeah. Like it's great.
There's no end to it, man. You'll never have read
everything. Yeah, it's true. Yeah.
If you were to go back and just like pick the flagship Marvel stuff and go back to the very beginning, all the way back to Amazing Spider-Man number one, the real number one, right?
Yeah.
And then not read the forward.
Imitation number one. Yeah.
Yeah. It would take you probably, if you read a couple of them a day, I haven't even done any math, but it'd probably easily take you a couple of years to get caught up on the Spider-Man and Fantastic Four.
Yeah, yeah.
And the Hulk, you know, and the X-Men, those staple books back in the day. There's so much of it out there. It's crazy.
Because Marvel recently has been doing the Epic Collection line, which is basically a hybrid of like an omnibus and like a trade paperback. And those are like $50. And I see a lot of people buying those. Those are definitely selling well. And it's really showing how these guys can only sell you shit from the good shit in their past. They're basically somewhat telling you, hey, yeah, we know our modern stuff is pretty bad. Hey, but can you buy the older stuff you remember? It's like,
Yeah, and I don't understand that. Even new fans would enjoy that older stuff more when they finally are exposed to it, I think.
Yeah.
I don't understand why they're taking the directions they are. I like going back to that Century limited series. I mean, not to sound too harsh about it or go, anti-woke necessarily, because it's not something I dwell on very much. But it feels like the idea was to have a wheelchair-bound character, and they got to that as quick as they could in four issues, when really that story arc could have been much longer, especially with the cast of characters that they had involved in that, you know, with all the different people getting a piece of the Century's powers. You know, there could have been a lot more done with that that wasn't done. And I have to believe that they, at the end of the day, they didn't really care to do anything really great with that.
Yeah, like, I wouldn't even really like call that woke per se. I think it's just, that's just bad storytelling.
It wasn't over the top. There was some, like, you know, there was some woke stuff in there. There was like some obligatory references.
That's the problem with some of these writers now. It's like you give some of these modern books a chance and they start out, they don't even start out bad. They mostly start out pretty okay. It's just the later issues that just go to crap. You know, I have no clue what it is. It might be their editors going like, hey, we got to make this more garbage. Cause I doubt that's, I would hope they're not doing that. It's just,
the editors, in my opinion, are weak with their leadership. Yeah,
Chief Cebulski and Jim Lee have no balls. They're just there for a paycheck at this point. You know,
none of these writers, you know, are like horrible writers. Like they can write, you know, even if you know, like what's her name, Vita Ayala, that so many people hate. Well, she's fairly prolific. She's put out a lot of work.
Yeah.
A good editor could mold that person into something more professional, but they did, for whatever reason, they choose not to. I don't know if they're afraid to do that or if they don't care. I'm not sure what the current corporate culture is, but it certainly is not continuity, and it's not making sure that your writers know your characters properly, you know. Which, you know, if you're going to write Spider-Man, I think you should have to pass a history exam on Spider-Man. Right.
Yeah.
You know, same for Batman. Same for Superman.
You know, because basically what they're doing is like, you worked at 7-Eleven gas station? Hell yeah, you can write my idol flagship character. It's like, no.
And I don't hate the player, man. I'll hate the game all day long, but I don't fault any of this talent out there that's taking these jobs. I mean, if they got offered a job, I can't fault them for taking it.
Yeah, it's money. You got to pay your bill. Bills don't care about feelings. You know, bills got to get paid on time. Yeah,
that's right. Yeah, and you know, if it's good or bad, it's like Hollywood. It's like the movies. You can't blame the actor, you know, for a bad movie. That responsibility falls on the shoulders of the director. You know, the director's the one who decides ultimately what goes into the movie. If he's a strong director. If he's just some figurehead that's, you know, that's put there for whatever reason, I guess it doesn't matter. But generally speaking, the director is like, you know, like the comic book editor. You know, they're the ones that should be piloting the ship. And I don't think anybody's piloting the ship right now. Nobody's driving the bus, really.
And a few more things from our subjects I want to ask you about here, which is music. You said you were big into music, too. What's some of your favorite music bands of all time, actually?
Well, my time was basically late 70s through the early 90s, so I'm a big Rob Halford, Judas Priest fan. I'm actually a singer in a cover band, and we cover a lot of that material, like Iron Maiden, you know, Tesla, maybe. I don't know if you've heard of those guys or not, but it's just a lot of what we, in our day, it was called heavy metal. Now I guess it's more like classic rock in the scheme of things. But that's kind of where I am music. I like all genres of music as long as I feel the artist is genuine. Like, you know, Eminem, you know, I'm not a great big rap genre fan, but his talent's undeniable, you know?
Yeah.
You know, any of the other guys that are at the top of their game over there, like Snoop Dogg, you know, guys like that.
Yes,
they're creating their art from their heart. You know, those songs mean something to them. They're not just out of a can. You know, country music, anything like that.
Are you a fan of like video games or tabletop RPGs and stuff like that?
Oh yeah, I started playing Advanced Dungeons and Dragons back around 1983.
What did you think about the movie that came out?
Well, I mean, it was fine with Chris Pine. You mean?
Yeah, that one.
I liked it. You know, it was a fun little adventure movie. Calling a movie Dungeons and Dragons is a little weird because Dungeons and Dragons is a game system, right? So if they want to concentrate on an intellectual property, they should concentrate on a setting in Dungeons and Dragons, like the Greyhawk world or the Forgotten Realms. You know, it should be presented that way. To call it Dungeons and Dragons is a little weird. I may have called it something else, and then like a Dungeons and Dragons adventure as a subtitle or something.
Yeah.
But I had fun watching that. There were some aspects of it that reminded me of the shenanigans players would get up to, you know.
Okay.
The weird things they would do. Like that scene where they were in the carriage using that portal mirror. Right? You remember that, where they're in the carriage and they use this magic mirror to portal into the thing to steal something out of it? Well, that's exactly what players would get up to in the game. So that was pretty cool.
And then you're a fan of not just comic books, but just regular books in general, you said, right? What's some of your favorite book series of all time, actually?
Bear in mind, I'm quite a bit older than you. So
okay, that's fine.
You probably won't remember. There's a series called...
I'm only old in my day. Back hurts.
Right. Well, it only gets worse, sir.
God damn it.
I know, right? But, you know, I read stuff like the YA fiction of my day was stuff like Susan Cooper's Darkest Rising series, which was like a young adult's Lord of the Rings light. And, of course, Lord of the Rings. I read that series. well, tons of fiction books. I don't read a lot of fiction these days because it's just something I don't have a lot of time for anymore. But almost any of the early work from Stephen King, a lot of horror genre in general, I was pretty big on for a long time. You know, H.P. Lovecraft and Edgar Allan Poe, you got to go back to the roots. Robert E. Howard's Conan, original Conan stories are fantastic, you know. Michael Moorcock's Elric series. A lot of this stuff is the literature that the gaming industry was based on. You know, Dungeons and Dragons came out and was heavily based on a lot of this literature. In fact, there in the original Dungeon Master's Guide, there's an appendix called Appendix N in the back of it that lists a great amount of literature that was influential to the game, which I would encourage anyone to go back and read. You know, but as we said before, you'll never read it all. You know, the vast amount of material available is just wonderful. And it's too much, but it's wonderful too. You know.
Yeah, and movies. What's some of your favorite movies of all time?
As far as fantasy and things like that go, all those 80s swords and sorcery fantasies, the Conan the Barbarian, Beastmaster, Hawk the Slayer, a lot of that stuff that that people remember from those days. But also, I love Scorsese's work. Any of the movies he's done, you know, Goodfellas, Wolf of Wall
Street.
Didn't
he do
Casino?
A gangster movie. I forgot the name of it. Yeah, it probably was Goodfellas, I'm remembering.
What? Well, he's done more than one gangster film. He did The Irishman.
Yeah, you're right. Recently. He did do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's an epic director. He's one of those guys.
What's that one gangster movie, name escapes my name, people call it a masterpiece? It's the one from like the 80s or 90s,
Probably The Godfather.
Godfather, yeah. Did he do that? I'm pretty sure he did that one.
I don't think so.
Someone else. I've never actually seen The Godfather. Actually, never seen any of those movies. A lot of people said that it's some of the best ever made, and I was like,
"It's pretty high." It's not very action packed, but it's very good stuff.
For me, when it came to like movies, when people said there's not enough action, I was like, not every movie has to have a bunch of explosions. Like, what people want a bunch of Michael Bay explosions in every single movie? It's like, no, that's not gonna happen. But I like the noir stuff. I some of that psychological stuff that movies like that can have, that's better than anything you'll get out of a dumb action scene. I think personally, having just dumb action scenes for the sake of having dumb action scenes is stupid, in my opinion. You know?
Yeah. That's like I said before, that falls on the director, you know, like Michael Bay, you know, he's great at what he does and he delivers a good time, but he's not delivering, you know, Chinatown, you know, he's not delivering the next great American film, you know, and I think he knows that. I don't think he takes himself as seriously as some other people do.
Yeah, man. And guys, there's so much stuff to read and review and consume. I can't wait to have a shelf. I'm here in my asylum walls, as people called them, actually, you know.
Yeah, you need a bunch of books and posters and toys. you can really turn that into something back there.
I have a shelf over there. I was gonna move it, and I have another dresser over here full of other comic books and omnibuses and stuff. I bought the Common America omnibus bundle. Man, those girls got some fat titties, just saying. Big titties always. Big titty women. All right, cool. You can take my money then.
Well, that's freaking sales, brother.
Ah, God, yeah. Damn it.
And it's going back to the Mary Jane thing. You know, a lot of, when you said feminists don't like it. Well, that's true. A lot of them don't.
Well, of course, they're ugly and fat. Of course, they don't like skinny, attractive women. That's crazy.
Yeah. what they don't understand about men is that we're not nearly as judgmental as they are. Mm-hmm. You know, but like those so-called fatter girls, we won't turn our nose up at them necessarily. You know, they're harder on themselves than we ever are.
Mm-hmm. Man, and looking at all the stuff going on, man, you would think hopefully the comic book industry can just get better. But, you know, I've kind of probably maybe we'll stop thinking that very soon. You just hope for the best. That's all you can really do. You know, if the titles come out and they survive, you just support the titles that you think you enjoy the most. And the other ones just... You know, a lot of that stuff, it sucks because, some of the stuff really isn't that bad, but it's like Marvel and DC, they drive the conversation so much that if people think that they're the only ones doing bad, then no one else is going to get any traction because that's just how the market would work, right? they kind of dictate the flow of the market in terms of like the average way people think about this, the comics in general. And it's such like indie creators too that are just making pretty decent stuff, but they can't get the traction because if people think most comics are bad, why would an average person believe that a random person is going to do a good job, you know?
Yeah, well, that's true. And that unfortunately is why some books in the indie sphere don't get the attention they deserve.
Yeah.
And here's one I did a review on called Keisha Demon Eater. And this is from Dream Fury Comics. Mm-hmm. And this creator's name is Newton. I'm going to butcher this last name, Livois. But this guy and the artist he uses is just unbelievable. I mean, let me see if I show you one of these things. Like this scene here where we've got these sort of hyenas. They're lycanthropic, like hyena men. Now look at that.
Oh, that's cool as hell. Holy crap.
Look at that. It's just ridiculously good.
That's super great. What is that?
This is Keisha Demon Eater from Dream Fury Comics. Go to my channel when you get a chance and look at the reviews I've left for Dream Fury. I did one just for Keisha, and I also did a Dream Fury roundup showing his other title. What's the name of that thing?
You said Demon Eater.
Keisha Demon Eater. It's from Dream. You go to dreamfurycomics.com.
Dream Fury.
It's amazing stuff. Yeah. And this is an indie book. This guy did this himself. You know?
Good Lord.
Like, look at.
Oh, it's cool. He's got his own website. He has everything.
Look at that action right there. Look at Keisha.
That's a black guy.
Yeah, oh, he is.
Oh, God.
I mean, it's fantastic. And they're
great. I like it.
There are references and homages to pop culture. Like, look at what she's wearing. That's a Bruce Lee outfit from the Game of Death. You know,
it's crazy. I went on his website, like you said, his artist is from the Philippines. What I like is that people are going outside of like the American artists and finding artists from like Brazil, finding artists in the Philippines that do what you want. You know, albeit people think just because they charge a cheaper rate based off their currency that you're getting some jank art. It's like, no.
This guy here is...
That is quality stuff he's getting there. He's probably getting.
He's as good or better than most anything. Giancarlo Bernal is that guy's name, the artist. And it's just... I was floored. Just, and I'm a longtime comic book reader, you know, and I've seen a lot of great art. And, you know, I love the Bushimas and the Ramitas. Kirby, Ditko, all those pioneers, and this book here, not just the art, the world that Lavlos has built, and the stories he's written are masterful. They're wonderful. This is like an 80-page book, and I burned through it. It's a page turner.
So that one right there, that's the one that I'm seeing right now. That's it. That's the number one, right, for that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so it says Keisha Demon Eater full color. Okay, I'll have this in my cart to buy. It's just
gorgeous.
Thanks for the recommendation, man.
Yeah, well, anytime, that's what my channel's all about. That's what I focus on. Is if you'll, I mean, I've only done a couple of mainstream reviews, really. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to get to the end of that damn Alan Scott Green Lantern run from that freaking Tim Sheridan.
God, to be honest here, I just couldn't do it. I saw the previews and I was like, nope, not getting into my money. That was like garbage.
If you want to be super glad you didn't, go look at my videos on it, because it's really just terrible in a big way. And Sheridan's another one, man. He's not someone who cannot write, but he should not be left to his own devices. He should have a strong editor pushing him.
Oh, remember, can't have someone telling him what to do. That would be homophobic.
Mm.
That's how it would go for these people. These people are just so up in their feeling scared about any level of, you know, disagreement or...
Yeah, any disagreement is an attack. I mean, I was called a detractor of Eric July because of my concerns about his book. And I've bought all his books, like you. I've got Yara on the way, you know?
Mm-hmm. Me too.
And going back to what you said about overseas talent, I mean, there's a lot of great talent out there, but you also have to be careful. Mm-hmm. And be watchful. And I think Eric July has fallen victim to that. Mm-hmm. I wasn't aware of how rampant the use of 3D assets were in comic books. And if it's well done, you shouldn't notice. And there's nothing wrong with it. You do what you got to do to get your book out. You know, how you generated your images isn't necessarily a deal breaker for me as a reader.
Yeah.
If it's good quality stuff. And when I was reading the Isom stuff, I knew there was something about the work that was bothering me, but I wasn't sure what it was.
Mm-hmm.
And if they had, you know, again, if they'd been a little more diligent with it, I probably wouldn't have noticed anything.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of it was the backgrounds that were bothering me more than anything else.
Mm-hmm.
I thought they were using, in the old days, they call it photostat, where they'd paste a city or something like that into the background. You know, I understand why. I mean, it takes hours and hours to draw an entire cityscape. So why not just, you know, photostat one in if you can get away with it? And I thought I was seeing bad photostat. As it turns out, I was seeing 3D assets. And even now people are denying that he used them, but I don't think that's not a mortal sin, in my opinion. You know?
Yeah, because what I've always told people is people that don't like him have gone to this position where it's like that means the book is bad. But and then people said, well, manga people use them to make sure their deadlines are met. And it's like, okay, so like my opinion is, are they an issue for people or not? Because then at that point, if we can't decide if they're an issue or not, then we're just kind of, it's just like a bunch of hot air, you know, because the average, if the readers don't care, I'll be honest with you, even if they were used, I didn't notice and I probably didn't care. Then I don't think it's a big deal. You know,
well, if you're getting lost in the story anyway, you're going to overlook that stuff. And at the end of the day,
because if it's only using like objects, like you said, like trucks and cities, it's like, is that really that big of a deal? We need to overblow that kind of stuff. I thought people really overblew it. Like, let's say for the sake of argument, he did use them, or he didn't notice that Cliff Richards used them. If he used them for like an office or a skyscraper or a truck, it's like, is that really what the hill we're dying on? Trucks and castles and cities.
And now it's opened the door to people who are just really nitpicking every single thing. I mean, some of these guys are going so far as to start drawing things out and nitpicking like every little perspective error, you know. And perspective is something that's easy to screw up. You know, it's getting your perspective in an illustration is difficult, you know. Seasoned artists. Mm-hmm. Let's for Ethan Van Sciver for another example. Mm-hmm. There are people out there that hate that guy. I mean, they hate him and they're saying that his work is trash. Okay. Well, here's one of his Cyberfrog books. Mm-hmm. This thing is gorgeous.
Look, that's the chromium cover.
This is a chromium cover now. And it's just gorgeous. And let's see. And his art skills can't be denied. I don't care how you feel about the guy. I mean, my God, look at that.
That's the thing. He's gone through some really weird period he's doing now, but I'll never deny that he has great art.
Yeah, in general. And at the end of the day, that's all I care about, really. And like I said, as long as he's not some freaking neo-Nazi trying to resurrect Adolf Hitler or something like that, you know, and if he's not some kind of, you know, weirdo sexual predator, you know, I can overlook a lot. There's some things I can't overlook, like things that are that egregious, but he hand draws all of this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
He does. And that's why he's so hard on anyone who's using 3D assets. He's an artist. At the end of the day, that's all he is.
And
he writes pretty decent stories. I wouldn't put him up there with as a great writer.
Yeah.
But visually, you know, you could go read this book 100 times and probably find more details you didn't see the first time.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why it takes him so long to put out a book. I get where he's coming from. I wouldn't be as harsh as he is about it. But
yeah, because the point that Ethan is in it at his career is a bit more of an established veteran. He just does art and writing, right? Mm-hmm. But people don't really talk about what's in his stories at all. It's almost as if like they just don't even read them or buy. I mean, I think they buy them. I think they hopefully maybe get them because, you know, he's been kind of laid out some stuff. Even when they do get the books, I don't think people read his books though, because all they tell you is good is about his art. You know, that's always a big sign for me, is a red flag, is if someone is only just complimenting the art of a book and not the actual story or telling you what's their favorite parts of a book, That's always right. A huge red flag. Because, you know, people have that, like, what's your favorite part of ice? I mean, I agree with that. I think people should, and I agree with that with Ethan, too. I think people should be asking, what's your favorite part about these indie comic books? Because that would show, did that person read that book? I don't think that's a bad thing, you know? Right.
Well, but I haven't read this one yet. I read the first one.
And did you like the first one?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, okay. It's a great alien invasion story. It's pretty extreme in its plot and as to what happens to the Earth. Mm-hmm. But I haven't read this one yet, primarily, and I've had it for a while. But Ethan Van Sciver doesn't need me to review his book, okay? If I review Cyberfrog, it's going to be better for me and get views than it is going to be for him to possibly get more eyes on his book. He's got plenty of eyes on his book. The other smaller creators are the ones that I like to showcase for that reason. Yeah. If 50 people watch a book that I review and a couple of them buy one who wouldn't have seen that otherwise, then mission accomplished for me. Mm-hmm. That's what I'm after. Mm-hmm. You know, for me as a YouTuber, this is, you know, strictly a hobby, man. I enjoy finding these independent guys, and especially when I find a real gem. And even if I find one that's bad and I choose to review it, I'm going to find something good about that. And I'm going to encourage that person as best I can, because they've created something. And you shouldn't spit on that. You know, you should never discourage anyone to create things. If anything, you should say, look, I like this. The story was pretty good. Here's where you are with your artwork. And I've got a book like that now. I'm going to have to really be very, very careful about how I frame it when I finally get to it. I'm saving that review for when they launch their Kickstarter. So I don't ever want to hurt the chances of an independent artist or comic book creator's chances at selling their book.
That's why I always tell, like, fans of the books that if you ever get the books that these people are making, and finally when you are able to get them in your hands, read them. You know, don't be that person where it's like you bought it. You buy it because you like it. That's probably the initial reason why. But, you know, if you want to further help that person, read it and put your reviews out there, however form you do it. Could be on Twitter posts, Instagram posts, whatever, YouTube video. Talk about the book. The only way these people can get more traction to their stuff is word of mouth. The reason why Marvel and DC got as big as they did is word of mouth. For the most part, it's word of mouth. People bought it enough to the point where they were talking about it nonstop.
That's right. Back when DC Comics were 10 cents per issue, you know, they didn't have giant ad campaigns. They were all independent companies at some point, and they became successful because they were offering something that hadn't been seen before. No one had ever seen anything like Superman. No matter what people try to tell you about what their definition of a superhero is, He's the first one. Yeah, they might want to tell you about another character like the Phantom that put on a mask and was a vigilante, but that didn't make them a superhero. Mm-hmm. I don't even really technically classify Batman as a superhero. He's definitely of that genre, and he's through skill and gadgetry has elevated himself, and just his sheer cultural impact certainly puts him in, you know, in that league. But if you wanted to split hairs, as so many fans like to do, I'll engage in that with someone if they insist. And if they do insist, then someone like Batman or even Tony Stark are not really superheroes. They're definitely heroes. Mm-hmm. They've definitely been able to elevate themselves through their ingenious work, but they're not superpowered beings, is my point.
Yes, sir. And that's why I told people, hey, I got plenty of comic book videos coming out. Definitely the way John DeLaRose does it is the way I kind of want to start doing it, just putting the book up there with the camera and just flip through the pages. I'll have ones where it's like this that I did with Professor Savage Dad, where I'm just having the book in my hand with like this and just talking to someone like that too. So
yeah, that's a little tough to do though. I like that's one reason why I love to have a digital version in addition to the physicals when I can get them.
So you can have the images on the screen. Yeah.
On the screen, and I'll show the book and how the quality of the print turned out, because that's important too. You want to know that you're getting a decent quality product. Some people don't like the newsprint from Alterna. I love it.
I like that kind of print actually.
I grew up reading. You know,
yeah, I love it. It can be very hit or miss, but I think it's just the way the style comes out that makes it hit. Because I know Dark Horse Comics did a book on magazine print, like the one you just said. It was like, did you know what happened or something, and it looked like really crap. The actual art looks like crap, but it's in that magazine format you said, and that looks way better, honestly, in my opinion.
Oh yeah, this is, and plus it's the smell, brings me back to my childhood. This
what was that again? Books. I want to name it.
T-Bird and Throttle.
That's from Alterna, you said, right?
Oh yeah. Anything I've gotten off of Alterna has been great. I'm probably going to eventually review everything they've put out. I mean, Red Koi's on my list. They've got
another so much stuff site here too.
So there's a lot. Yeah. There's you can spend a lot of time just on their material.
I bought something for their dollar bin. I know I did before. I just can't find it because I have so much conflicts in that other room that are just packages.
Yeah, these,
I found it. There we go.
These King Cryptids here. These are all signed by Peter Cimetti.
Mm-hmm.
And I got these signed by Peter Cimetti for $3 each. $3 each. And the cover price is $1.99. But for an extra dollar, he'd sign them. So, of course, why wouldn't I spend the extra dollar and get them all signed?
Yeah, right here. Okay, I should probably start showing off more of Alterna comics. So here's one that I'll show you because you showed me it. So I don't know if you're big into like religion or anything, but this will matter in general. There's Grok comics actually. Bill Rapp.
Grok comics. Yeah, I mean, check that. You can't see the poster very well, but I've got.
Oh, one I see it. The Remnant. Up. Oh, so you already get it. Okay, so that's fine. Yeah.
Yeah, Love Thief in the Night, man. That's a great character. Now they're doing good stuff, man. I'm not religious. But their comic books are not just vehicles for their faith. First and foremost, they're putting out good quality stories.
Yeah, we read The Remnant issue number 0, which is like a collection of like his first stuff. It's actually pretty good. It was also like, because you know, with indie comics, I don't want to be mean, but sometimes this stuff is not interesting and it's not that good. But when I read this is pretty quality. It's pretty solid.
Although it's going to be a vanity project from people, and there's nothing wrong with that. Do what you are inspired to do is what I always tell people. Mm-hmm. And every now and then you run across a thread on like on social media. What do you guys want to see me do? And I always respond, you have to do what you're inspired to do. And remember that you are not unique. And if you feel good about what you're doing, there are going to be people out there who do. You got the whole internet at your disposal, and the world is your market. You know, I've had people from India comment on my videos, which is awesome. That's on the other side of the planet. I mean, what an age we live in, right?
Yeah.
You know, we can reach people in other countries with no problem, man. And as a creator, you can do that. But yeah, Grok Comics is great, and Bill Rapp, who is the head of that, the whole thing, man, he is steeped in the same sort of old school comics material that I am. Mm-hmm. And as an old guy who's been reading them for a long time, I really enjoy seeing a lot of the stuff he does, which are homage covers to things that are kind of obscure, even things DC did a run of Archie Comics.
Yes.
Heroes. The line was called Impact Comics. And I grab these out of dollar bins every chance I get. Here's one called The Comet, right? And here's The Comet, The Jaguar, The Invincible Shield, which is like a sort of a proto Captain America thing. But this is a definitely 90s era quality stuff. And it's still out there and pretty cheap to collect. But the point being is like there's a cover of The Fly. That he did a homage to for his character.
Yes.
And I was, I love seeing that, you know, and most people probably won't spot that, but I did, you know. So I always like it when I figure out that the creator that I'm reading kind of grew up reading the same stuff that I did, sort of old pop culture reference.
Well, now that, you know, when I get paid next week, I'll have two other indie comic books to buy. Actually, that Supernatural Horror one looked really, really fucking cool.
Dream Fury has got it going on. I hope they can continue to put out material.
I hope so, too.
Yeah. Another great creator, publisher out there is called Stranger Comics.
Mm-hmm.
And Sebastian, I forget his last name, is the creator behind all that. Mm-hmm. And he has this vast fantasy world that he's created that is just full of, it's like fantasy role playing stuff, and it's a lot of it's. You know, he's a black creator, and a lot of his characters are black, it's a thing where he's not pushing a message in particular. He's just putting out fantastic quality stuff, man. And I've been getting lost in his stuff. I've been doing reviews. Niobe is his main flagship character. Mm-hmm. And she is this half elven sort of chosen one character that's on a path to her destiny. And it spans several different titles. He's got this huge amount of material out there. You can and his stuff can be expensive because he's doing also hardbacks and and compilation volumes. And it's just beautiful stuff. If you want something high quality to stick on your shelf and you know it's going to last you for years and years, that's one of the guys to check out. But yeah, Stranger Comics, man, check them out. And also in the faith-based vein, Starcross Comics. They have a lot of cool stuff. They just picked up another guy who did a comic book that I reviewed called Alpha Red. And he's republished his material under them. Alpha Red is a great comic. Check that out if you get a chance. I did a video on it. I mean, you go back and look at my channel, you'll see a lot of this stuff there.
Few last things I'll ask you here. It was great talking to you, man, this whole time. And we'll start here. You have any big plans for your YouTube channel coming up very soon, actually? Or are you just going to be sticking with the same things you're going to be doing?
Well, I do want to do more movie and TV reviews. And eventually, if I can make it work with my schedule, I would love to do some sort of a weekly stream and have a creator on that I could help out. I guess my long-term goal is to get enough subscribers, have enough of a viewer base where it would be a real asset to the creators that I want to showcase. I want to do more for them than they do for me. That's why that's what I meant when I said Ripaverse doesn't need me to review their stuff, even though I do, because I buy their stuff. And so I'm going to review it. I had my opinions about the ISOM books and I made those clear, what my concerns were with their quality and the art and the writing, regardless of 3D assets. But I gave a glowing review to Alpha Core. And I stand by that. It's a great book. I love
that. You know what's crazy about Alpha Core is that page that Eric always shows off where it's Brian grabbing the guy and he's shooting at him. Yeah. I was like, Eric, that's not even the best page in the book. The best page is when Brian's flying at the hillbilly magma guy. That's Flash page. That's the best page to me, in my opinion, in the book. But you know what?
I love that guy. The magma guy?
I also love the hillbilly magma guy. That sounds cool as hell if you really think
about it. That Galvin character, that insane electric guy.
Oh yeah, I remember.
Just maniacal, you know, totally unhinged. You know, I love a villain like that too. But
that's why people are saying
people didn't like Alpha Core, you know.
Yeah, that's what
they picked it apart, you know. And I'm like, well, come on, man, did you have some fun? Because that's what it's about for me. Like I said before, I try to approach these things from the point of view of a reader. Now I know a little bit about the craft of comics, but I don't know. I'm not a comic pro, so I don't know every little technical thing that's wrong with these books, but again, I don't showcase the mistakes as much as I try to showcase the successes.
Mm. And that's the other thing too, is I told people is when it comes to some of these newer or even veteran indie comic guys, they can only get better. You know, you'd hope that just try to hope that they get better and better. I think people think Eric's. Yeah, it's crazy because people think like Eric's the entire indie comic scene. It's like, that's just not true. It's like,
you guys think Ripaverse and All Caps Comics, Ethan and Eric, they are a very, very small sliver of what's out there. I mean, you go like look at Indie Planet, man. Look at
Indie Planet's a great place, yeah.
There's other sites like there's Global Comics. There's stuff you can read for free as webcomics that are just beautiful stuff, you know. And I'm trying to get to it all, but it's going to be rough. I try to put out 3 videos a week. Last couple of weeks, I haven't been able to do that. I put one out last week. I've got one out for this week, and I'm going to get my Free Comics Friday out tomorrow. But ultimately, to answer your question about the long-term goal, like I said, I want to become influential enough that I help the creators that I try to showcase. Mm-hmm. I want that to be something that's beneficial for them when they appear on my show.
I gotta tinker with this later on. No, what the heck? Oh my god! I don't know why I just did there. Because I want to do it where, as I said, where it's like my camera and the book. I there's no way that John M. Suntag does it on his videos. I gotta ask him how does he do that? Because I would like to do it on StreamYard actually, but you know, I have a phone and a stand there, so I could probably just do it ghetto like that.
I want to do that too. I want to be, especially for some of the larger books that I want.
Oh, for sure.
I've got an old Jack Kirby hardback. It's got a lot of his early work where he does a lot of a lot of cowboy stories and stuff like that. But it's a huge book, and there's no digital version of that. Mm-hmm. So what you'll need is, and what a lot of these guys do, is an overhead camera, and I had to get one of those rigged up myself. So yeah, I totally get the flip through thing. That's a great idea.
I think that's what people mostly respond to when it comes to reviews. Because I was looking at comic book reviews on YouTube. Like, I was like, what really does people look at? So people mostly look at lengthy stories being told to them so they don't have to buy the book. Or people really like to watch comic book hauls, or people showing off what they bought that week. People like to be told what's coming out during the week. And if you're not doing any of that, which mostly gets the most views, then you have to basically review a book in general. That's it. Because usually when I get to a new type of anything, I like to go through YouTube and see what are they mostly looking at when it comes to this stuff. And it's, my God, there's not a lot of views when it comes to comic book stuff in general. But in stuff that is getting views, it's most of the same routine stuff. It's like, what's coming out this week? What did I buy this week? Comic book hauls. That's it.
Yeah, yeah. And when I started the channel, I was looking at some of the how to be a YouTuber stuff because I didn't have any idea what I was doing, right? And I'm still learning, of course. And one of the biggest pieces of advice that's given is to niche down as far as you can and offer something that other people aren't necessarily offering. And I feel like in comic books, I probably niched down as far as I can on the indie scene, because what I'm doing is a little different than what even other indie comic book YouTubers are doing. They're engaging in a lot of the drama farming. They're really the big two of indie is, the Ripperverse and the Ethan Van Sciver. So there's a lot of little satellite channels that have popped up around that, and they're doing pretty well, and that's great for them. That's great. But I've said this in a previous video of mine, one of my rare drama commentaries, is that's not how I want to grow my channel necessarily. Mm-hmm. That Ripperverse video got almost 4,000 views, and sometimes I almost regret making the dang thing because I don't want to polarize the fans. I want the fans, and I've said this in videos too, I want the fans to think for themselves and get the things that they're going to enjoy regardless of what other people are saying.
Right. Yeah. And the other thing I'll ask you before we head out, which is, you got any shout outs you want to give to anyone in particular and anything else you want to say before we head out?
Well, we've covered a lot of them, but I just would shout out to, go check out Dream Fury. Go check out Alterna if you haven't. Stranger Comics is another one. Just kind of start trolling around online for these other creators, because they're out there and they're putting out products that are as good as or superior to a lot of the stuff we see even in the mainstream. I mean, like the Dream Fury thing, I'd put that up against anything that Marvel and DC's put out.
Oh, probably, yeah.
Oh, it's phenomenal.
Just in art alone. Just in art alone, it probably slams all of them.
And the story is just as banging as the art. Mm-hmm. It's fantastic. I can't say enough good things about Dream Fury or Stranger Comics. I mean, they're killing it, man. And if you're not getting into them, then you're missing out. One more thing I'll say is go look at Archie Comics. I'm going to review some Archie Comics stuff. They've done some alternate reality stories, with the horror genre in particular is what I've sort of been looking at right now. They've got a great werewolf story where Jughead is a werewolf. it's fantastic. It sounds funny, man, but it's not funny. It's a great horror adventure. So yeah, there's so much out there. There's so much, if I would say anything to other fans, just branch out, man. Don't be afraid to look at other stuff.
That's true. Yeah. Don't be afraid to, go out and find other creators that have their own stuff. Like, I would always recommend. I think I got Bronze Star from Mike Barron. That art looked great in that book.
Yeah, I read Bronze Star. That's a great story. And I think
did you get the cover A with the guy with the shotgun? Is the cover where he's looking back and has the that cover just looks so beautiful. There are certain did you get a Big Man Comics, Dean Cain All American Lawman?
I didn't get that one, but in that vein, I will show you one more thing. This is from Kyle Ritter, and this is the colorist Ethan Van Sciver uses. But this is Kyle Ritter's work. This is his own book. Oh my God,
that is just and that's so gorgeous.
He must be just making great money coloring for other people, but he's a hell of an artist. Mm-hmm. I mean, his line work and his coupled with his phenomenal coloring ability anyway. It's just insane. I mean, this guy, I don't know what he's doing right now, but he could bury a lot of the let me see, there's one here that's just fantastic. I mean, all of it's great. Every bit of his work is fantastic. Let's see here. I mean, gosh, it's not the one I was looking for, but good Lord, look at that.
Yeah, like the art is so good out of some of these indie comics, actually.
And he's written a good story. I mean, I won't say it's, you know, the height of literature, but this Kyle Ritter is a monster. He's just he's a beast. Look at this. He's incredible. And I don't know if he's going to do any more with this book or not. I mean, I hope he does, because look at this. Here's one without the color. This is just his line work. Look at that.
Wow. Jeez.
Look at that. Look at that right there. My God. He's unbelievable, you know. And that's just one more example. Yeah. And that's Star Blades is the name of that.
Yeah, and I'll make sure to write down these other indie comic book books to buy. But it was a great talking to you, man, for the first time. And thank you guys for checking out this episode of the Iron Man Podcast. And as you guys know, on Thursdays, we have the Cloud 9 Podcast coming up at around 7 PST, talking about all things going on in League of Legends. And we have Friday Bangers coming up. So much awesome stuff. And make sure you guys stay safe out there, be awesome, and be great. See you guys later. Deuces.